Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to season 12 of Excelsior Journeys, The Road to Creativity, part of the Podmatch Podcast Network. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. And every now and then we get to an episode that is just the perfect fit for what I intend to do for this show. And in January, one of the things that I always like to keep an ear out for are New Year's resolutions. Everyone's got them. I have my own. And the one that I keep on running with is to use the tools that I have with me at the time and to just try to get whatever I need to do going forward, because I am one of those people that collect a whole bunch of different tools and programs and processes and everything, and I never do anything with them. So this time around, I really actually want to kind of go in and see what I got and use what I got. And there are a lot of people that have similar resolutions, and they are all manifesting some great things for themselves. They are saying, I am going to be a published author. I am going to get my wellness in check. I'm going to make myself stronger, weight less, just healthier, everything. I am going to get a better mindset for myself. I'm going to make that music that I've always wanted to make. And I am so thrilled to have as my guest this week for the season 12 premiere, Mr. Mark Firehammer, because Mark is the perfect amalgam of everything that he has been doing in terms of everything that he does. He is an author, he's an illustrator, he's a dancer, he's a musician, and he is doing all these great things. He has listened to this show and been able to capture all these different interviews that I've done over the years with all of these great creative forces. And he himself has gone through music and storytelling and entrepreneurship. And he has not only claimed himself as an author with his debut novel, which is under the name J.W. Kindbloom, called The Echo and the Voice, but he also has an album that goes along with it. And he is also responsible for a health and wellness process called My Feelness. And we're going to be talking about all of this in this very well-packed episode. So I am really, really thrilled to have as my guest this week, Mr. Mark Firehammer. Mark, how are you, sir?
I'm good, George. Thank you. I'm thrilled for the first time in my more than six decades to be the perfect fit for something.
There you go. There you go. So, yeah, just reading all about everything that you told me about yourself, everything that you're doing, and all of these different creative ventures that you've been on, it's been just fascinating. And I knew that as you introduced yourself through Podmatch, which is yet another great success story using Podmatch, I just knew that I not only had to have you on, but I had to have you on in January, because this is when everyone is looking to basically just decide that they're going to go that route of like new year, new me, and I'm going to finally take that initiative and do all the things that I said I was going to do. So I am excited for this year that's ahead. I know you are as well with everything that you have going. And I am just thrilled to hear more about what you have. So
let's do it.
Tell us a little bit about the novel itself that you have going.
The novel was a real turning point for me. The Echo and the Voice is an allegory, so it's in the fiction category. But the experiences and the passion and all the timeline points in Jonas Wilder's story, he's the main character, are echoes from my real life. As you've already mentioned, I was a professional musician for most of my adult life. Mm-hmm. And Jonas Wilder's character is really kind of a mirror of that experience. Because when you're playing music and you're out on the road, and I was out on the road full time, I didn't even keep a home.
Really?
You start to really see a contrast between doing what your parents and what culture tells you you're supposed to do, go to school, get a degree, get a job, raise a family. And then here I am doing the exact opposite of that. I'm doing all the things that my parents warned me about and thriving while I was doing it. And Jonas's story is that story told in allegory. And the allegory is just that juxtaposition of the challenge that creative people, and I believe that all human beings are creative. Culture just stamps it out of some of us. Is that the voice is what rides with you. It came with you at birth, maybe even from past lives, however you want to look at it. And the echo is the culture trying to, everybody trying to tell you what to do and what not to do. So it's that battle. It's that conflict between doing what your heart says and, you know, trying to be a good member of your family and of society in general.
That's so the album that you have that's accompanying the story, is that basically like music that is, I would say, written by your character?
Well, yes, but given that my character is not real,
yeah,
I wrote all the songs over the last 40 years. I started writing songs as a daily habit in, I want to say, about 1986.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So all of the songs that Jonas Wilder has on his album were written by Mark Firehammer beginning in 87. Nice. And what's really
great way
cool.
Great way to use your own legacy.
Oh, my God. And George, I'm telling you, when I realized what I could do in January of 2025, what I could do with the new tools available, the large language models, everybody calls it AI, but I don't refer to it as AI because there's nothing intelligent about it. It's true. Just, it's got a lot of information that you can borrow to organize things. So long story short, I realized as a songwriter with the voice, with the singing voice that I have, the vast majority of my songs didn't belong to my voice. They weren't meant to be sung by me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So as I retired at the age of 40 in 2000, I'm like, okay, I've released 21 songs of my 100 songs. I guess I'm just going to be okay with those children, if you will, never having a life out in the world. And that's important for a guy like me because I never wrote for the marketplace. I never wrote to be famous. I never wrote to be a big star. I wrote as like the ancient bard of the days of yore.
Nice.
You go around the world. You observe people. You observe life. You think about it. You make conclusions. And then sometimes you maybe even tell a story that helps somebody make a different decision. Not a better one, but a different one. So these songs belong together in sequence, and Jonas's album is a 10 songs, but one of them appears twice. And when you listen to the album, it's called, the name of the album is Songs in the Key of Return. And if it rings a bell, it's a bit of a nod to Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie Wonder.
Yep, Stevie Wonder, yep.
Yes. So given the era that I came from, it was a nod out of respect to the greatness that he embodies and writers like him and his era. So the songs from this album are sequenced from the beginning to the end in a very specific order because Jonas's trajectory as a character and my trajectory as an artist in life followed growth milestones, discoveries, realizations about self and about the world. So the songs, without Jonas even realizing it, without me even realizing it, came through me as a writer, but to give me an understanding that I wasn't quite ready for. If you hear a lot of artists, like Billy Joel is a good example, James Taylor's another one, they talk about, I didn't really know what I was saying. It was just coming through me. Artists tend to channel things. And that's why that's a phenomenon that usually happens to very young artists, because they're not yet burdened with the responsibilities of life or fame and fortune, whichever case may be. And for me, I was never concerned about that. So I just continued to channel these songs based upon what I was seeing through a mental understanding and openness and curiosity about the world that caused them to come together in a way that told a story and is capable of awakening people who are curious about maybe what's not quite right with their life. And when I sprang this album, which is not sung by me, I used large language model tools to create a persona that is Jonas Wilder.
Yeah.
So that same not existing, not real character sings on all 10 tracks. Yeah, which is really cool. And for that me, as an artist, I don't want to listen to my albums. I like all the songs I've written, but I don't want to sit and listen to my albums. There's just something weird about that. But now that I have the tools and I know how to use them, I can listen to the now, let's see, 20, 40, 60, 70, 80 songs that I've released as a collection. Yes, as a collection. Yeah. And I don't even realize that they're my songs because I'm not listening to my voice.
Right. Now,
which is fascinating.
So you're using the AI tools to create a different voice?
Yeah, to produce the songs as if Jonas was a real person.
Okay. Have you thought about getting other people to maybe come in and cover them at least?
Well, that'll happen organically, George, when the book sells a certain amount of copies, which is going to lead to a certain amount of listens to the thing. Yeah. People will go, oh, I love that song. And then it doesn't happen as much nowadays. But when I was in my 20s, I would hear someone play one of their songs and I'd love it. And I would then learn it. Nowadays, you don't see a lot of young people with guitars in bars like what you did when I was coming. And it makes me a little sad. I see a lot of old guys with guitars playing the same songs I was playing in the 80s. But to answer your question, have I thought about that? I haven't thought about making an effort to get people to cover it because it's a lot of work and the songs aren't really meant to be hits. They're not meant to be on the radio. They're really well crafted. Have you listened to it at all?
I haven't been able to listen to the album yet, but I'm looking forward to doing so.
Well, when you do, I would love to hear from you and get your impressions. My advice is always listen to it in order from beginning to an end. Just cue it up and grab a libation and just listen.
Nice.
When I sprang it on some of the people that I've known for years and said, I just want you to listen to this. I wrote the songs. You recognize some of the songs. Just listen to it all the way through and then just tell me what you think. And I didn't prep them at all. And the response was always the same. They're like, oh, my God, what happened in my mind and in my body as I got through these 11 tracks was profound. It made me question some of the decisions I'd made and to come to real terms with what I was maybe going to do next to truly find my voice and my purpose for the rest of my life.
And one of the things that we always hear a lot about AI is how it'll get the message across, but without the soul of the messenger. Right. Have you noticed that at all in the recordings when you're able to listen to it, or were you able to kind of inject the soul and then just alter the voice?
Yes. That's a great question, George. I love it. And I have not found that to be true. And here's the key, I think. Number one, you can't make a great song out of a crappy lyric.
Yes. Right?
If the lyric is not well structured and it doesn't deliver something meaningful, some songs aren't about anything. Some songs are just fun to move around to. I'm talking about the kind of music that I write. Because the songs were so well crafted, and when I say crafted, I mean I studied the craft of songwriting for 30 years. I've had some huge mentors in my life. I learned a lot of valuable lessons. And because I brought good songs to the tool set, and I'm a very organized guy, I overcame what some people are observing, what you just said. Yeah. Okay, it's cool, but there doesn't seem to have any soul. How I avoided that is start with a good song, find the voice that I'm looking for through iteration. And when I say iteration, I'm talking anywhere between 40 and 100 iterations per track.
Wow.
And so each time I iterated it, I had to make a note of what did I ask for? Because using large language models and AI tools, it's about the prompt. If you rush it and you just keep asking for the same thing just in a different way, you never get a different result. It's like our buddy Einstein said, if you keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result, that's the definition of insanity. What I did is I used spreadsheets to track the prompt and then notes about what did I get from that prompt that I like? What did I get from that prompt that I didn't like? And then I crafted a new prompt based upon that metadata. Wow. The end result was, oh my God, that's the song. That's it right there. That's Jonas Wilder singing that song. Now, the next piece to really make sure the soul is there, because the tool does not have lived experience.
Right.
If you don't carefully go in, now that I've narrowed it down to the Jonas Wilder voice and style, I have to make sure that every syllable, every vowel placement matches what this character, this avatar sounds like. So I would then go in and carefully surgically adjust the length of a line by getting rid of things, like get rid of the, get rid of any word that doesn't need to come out of Jonas's mouth, and give him room to express that lyric with full value instead of tripping over a word that doesn't need to be there anyway.
Right.
So the craft is really using this as a tool is in the discipline to not settle for less than what you hear in your head. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Too many people who use AI are making that mistake because
they're dazzled just thinking by the front end.
Oh, all I have to do is just, I'll just plug this in and then boom, it'll come out. And that's when it comes out terribly. Yes. And they're likely this, a lot of them, I'm sure the same people that took part in National Novel Writing Month wrote from November 1st to November 30th. And then on December 1st hit publish instead of doing the work and actually like making something out of that initial draft that I always have to say, it is the initial draft. It is not the finished product. You have built the foundation. That is all you've done. So stop thinking about what the curtains are going to look like. You still have to build the rest of the house. So like that's something that a lot of people need to be reminded of, is that AI can be a tool that can be useful, but you have to use it the right way. And it's just with any sort of tool.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I tell people all the time, because I'm asked a lot about how I use AI and why I use AI. And let me give you an example, because you just touched on something about book writing. My own timeline of 40 years as a professional singer and traveler is in there. So the risk was making it autobiographical. So how I used AI, once I had the story mapped out, it's going to be this many parts, this many chapters. Here are the characters. Here's their archetypes. Here's their relationship to each other. Here's their role in the storyline. Then and only then did I write the book. Once I finished the rough draft, I used AI in a very specific way. I said, okay, now here's my manuscript. I want you to pretend to be an editor whose job it is to check your story arc and check your callbacks and your call forwards and make sure there's continuity beginning to end. That's the only thing I want you to look at. So you ask the large language model to put on a very specific hat and perform a very specific task, rather than doing what most people say is check this out, tell me what you think. I don't know if you've noticed, George, but these models are very sycophantic. They congratulate you and tell you how great you are all the time. And that's part of the dazzle of the front end. I don't pay any attention to any of that. I know what it is and I know what it's good at, and I don't ask it to try to fill in any blanks for me. And my book, Echo and the Voice, had three technical passes after the draft. The story arc pass, the publisher main editor pass, and the final one was, what was the final? Oh, you are the leader of a book club. I want you to read this book from that point of view and tell me if it's discussable with your group. And I want you to these other books as an example, books that are popular in book clubs as an example and as a comparison. And the significant changes that I was advised to make, I made about 70% of them. Because some of them, I felt it was just a little out there and I knew what I was trying to do and I didn't let AI tell me to do something else.
So I'm really fascinated with the way that you've coined that large language model. That's a good way to look at it. And because by looking at it like that, you're not automatically expecting it to do what too many people are asking it to do.
Right.
And basically just kind of take over their product. Right, so that way it speeds up the process and gets it out there. Yeah. But then that reminds me of something that I remember someone saying, I still haven't heard the argument that I should be bothered to read a book that you couldn't be bothered to write. And so that's a stigma of using these tools that we have to kind of overcome. I feel that I would absolutely not use a large language model or AI, depending on the way that so many other people are using it.
Yeah.
Because they're just thinking like, oh, knock out this book while I take care of the dishes. Just like, well, that's the total reversal of what it should be.
Yeah.
And, you know, it should be able to take care of all the menial tasks while you get to focus on the love of writing. Otherwise,
and the
why
passion of your
doing
subject.
It?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So with all of this, what sort of tips do you have based on your own experiences working with the large language model, what sort of tips do you have for those that are curious about using it, but don't want to fall into the traps that so many other people do?
Oh, that's a great question, George. You're the first one to ever ask me that. And I've got an answer without even thinking about it. I know a lot of people who have used AI, large language models, to write things that they couldn't have written on their own. And in discussions with them, what I shared with them is this. When it first began to become a tool that was consumer-facing, I immediately jumped on board. I spent a lot of money on some very expensive trainings early on. And the thing that I learned was what a large language model is. And OpenAI has a sandbox that's still available. It's like a little playground where you get to look under the hood of a large language model.
Oh, cool.
And understand exactly how does it assemble the answer to a question. How does it use its vast library of all the information that's in it to formulate an answer? It's called a token system. I immediately disassembled that car to understand how it runs, how it works. What are the pieces? How do they interact to produce a car that runs? Mm-hmm. And I did the same thing only because of the time that I jumped on board. It wasn't yet moving fast to dazzle me with the front end. That's the mistake that my younger friends that are using it to write beyond their own abilities, they're dazzled by the front end. They think it's intelligent. They actually think of it as another person. And so my advice is don't do that. Understand it by going and playing in the sandbox. Understand how that it does this magic. All it is magic. Yeah. Know that the back end, the large language database, and the front end are two different sets of programming. The front end programming is the one that dazzles you and tricks you into believing you're talking to another human being. But once you understand what the back end is, that becomes less meaningful. Now, long way of saying, when you understand what it is, you then understand what you should and shouldn't ask it for. There's all these this advice about it hallucinates.
Yeah.
And people that don't do their homework and jump in behind the scenes and understand it, they don't spot the little hallucinations because they're still asking it to fill in the blanks that they don't already have the information for. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to write something, get all your information that's going to go into that first. Get it all written out in Google Docs or whatever. Organize your thoughts. Make an outline. If it's fiction, write your story arc. Create your characters. Choose an archetype. Define the relationships between those characters. Don't ask a large language model to do any of that for you. Once you have all the details, you can then use the tool to say, I want you to help me organize this in a way that someone who's already written 10 books understands how to do. I need that expertise, right? I don't need you to fill in any blanks. As long as I don't ask for missing information, it can't hallucinate. Yeah.
That's great. That's a great way to do it too. The fact that you are going out of your way to say, don't do that.
Yeah.
Your commands. It's not going to pull a Skynet and say like, no, it actually wants me to, he actually wants me to do this instead. But that's not going to happen. So it puts you in a much better position than if you were to just say, here, go ahead and write this book. So that would take
all the fun out of it for me.
Right. Exactly. Like, I mean, the whole point of this, the whole reason why we are who we are is because we have stories inside us that need to come out. And whether it is part of our real life, whether it's something that is totally fabricated, something that was inspired by something else, my own head is just like this wonderful jumble of all these different bits of inspiration picked up over the years with the mess that is my own life and just coming in and providing all those unique perspectives. And somehow it winds up coming out into a book that I'm pretty proud of. So it's fascinating the way that we do this. But then what you're also doing as what it seems like to be part of your mission in life is not only supplying this sort of unique experience with this book and this album, which I do have to ask, why the pen name?
Oh, you want me to answer that now?
Yeah.
It's very interesting that you ask that. My real name is Mark Firehammer, and whenever I'm asked,
it's a kick-ass name too.
It is a kick-ass, but it never fit me. I was a little kid. I was slight. I have tiny bones. I'm 6'1", 200 pounds now. But as a kid, it did not fit me at all. I was bullied. It's fascinating to me how it's exactly the name that I needed because it added a layer of difficulty that I needed in this lifetime to always know that everything and everyone was going to try to tell me to be something other than what I was when I was born.
Yeah.
Right. So I knew I was never Mark Firehammer. And until I wrote this book, I didn't give myself permission to decide who am I really from an identity point of view. So here's the answer to your question, George. Kindblom is my mother's ancestral name from Sweden. It's in America, we say Kindblom. It's spelled that way. But in Sweden, it would have been Kindblom. It would have had some funny little characters over the U and wouldn't have looked the same. But why choose that? Well, my mother, in a family of five, was the only ally that I had. My father was a tyrant. He was a true fire hammer, right?
Yeah.
Not even a velvet glove. He ruled with an iron fist.
Oh, wow.
And my sisters were very conformist. And they, I think they won't admit it, but they were scared of him like everybody else was. If you weren't afraid of him, you were foolish. You were not paying attention.
Really?
So, yeah. So here I'm almost 60. At the time, I'm 60 years old when I write this book. I'm like, now's the time for me to decide who I am in this voice. So it just was a natural thing to choose my mother's ancestral name. And JW is a nod to Jonas Wilder, the character,
the protagonist in the
book.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's almost like the feeling of when you're, as you grow up, you're basically, you can either accept who you are or you can choose to go beyond it. Like you have these two factions of robots that are created. One was military hardware and one was consumer goods. And you have these military hardware basically becoming what we now know as Decepticons that are embracing who they are and choosing conquest, while the consumer goods, who would call themselves Autobots, choose to go beyond their programming and to actually like become better than what they were originally. It would be very easy for them to fall in line with what they were designed to be.
Yes.
You're Mark Firehammer right there. You could have just said, like, I'm a Firehammer, and choose to live what you saw as Firehammer.
Yeah.
Or you can choose to go beyond that and carve your own destiny. And so it sounds very much like what you've done here.
Yes. And I love your reference to the Transformers. You just dated yourself as a little younger than me. But I had a roommate in 1982 who had a 4-year-old. And this kid was all about the Transformers.
Yep. I was 8 when they came out.
Okay.
So I got it right at the exact right spot. Exactly. And that's something that I feel like that particular toy line, you could say, but that legacy grew so much with me and attached itself so much to me because it was something that I discovered. It was mine. Like, my father introduced me to Star Wars. He introduced me to Star Trek. He introduced me to all these other things that I would eventually grab onto. My mother would do the same thing. Exactly. But when it came to Transformers, that was something that I discovered on my own and I grabbed onto. And I was like, this is mine. And it's something that I hold much, probably more so than a lot of other people. But it's just something that I truly care about. And it's because of that, because like I found it, I grabbed onto it, and I grew with it. So
yeah, I can hear it in the way you present, George, that those things that you latched onto and made your own are the reason why you've managed, it seems, to hold on to more of the childhood wonder that you knew at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 before you got into school. And there's a lot of conditioning that goes on in school. And so you, because of those mythologies in those things that I love all of them as well, That's the reason why you held on to more of that childish wonder of the world. Kudos to you and to every young person trapped in a growing older person's body. I think of myself as the same four-year-old that used to sit out on the snowbank in my backyard in Leominster, Massachusetts back in 1965, 66, watching, waiting for the moment when the very first tulip pushed its head through the snow.
Oh, wow.
Right. And I would just sit there and wait. Every day I would go out. I needed to be there in that moment. Yeah. And the first song of Jonas's album, Songs in the Key of Return, is Tulips Don't Wait.
Mm.
And I wrote the first four lines of that poem when I was seven in 1969.
Oh, I
didn't finish the poem until I needed to finish the album. So, I wrote it four lines in 69, and I wrote the rest of the four verses in 2025.
My friends and I, when I was in fourth grade, were kind of coming up with our own characters to pass the time in between assignments. And those characters were the seed that would eventually grow in 1992 to a brand new character that I wanted to add to that little universe. And that character would be Excelsior. And I would go on to pick at him a little bit and kind of really cultivate him and really see where I was going with him, trying these different stories with other characters and trying this and trying that, inspired by different pieces of music to come up with this scene. And then finally in 2008, I started writing his novel. And then in 2010, it came out. And then in 2013, the second edition came out with all the fixes that I wanted to put in as soon as it came out and everything. And I held that first edition in my hand and I was just like, wow, it would have been a lot better if I did this or this or this. So I got to do all of that. And then it got picked up by another publisher in 2017 and then it got a full overhaul. And so now it's with a brand new publisher and getting ready for its re-release. And while I'm writing part three,
that's all part of the Transformerverse?
Well, not part of the Transformerverse, but it was inspired by it.
Inspired by
it. Yeah. And it's my own universe. And it's something that I have held on to, just like with your poem, writing those first few seven lines in the late 60s and now finally getting it finished. And that's where I am right now. This character has been with me for over 30 years. And I don't know where... And I don't know where I'd be without him. I honestly don't.
Yeah. That's a beautiful story, George. I appreciate you sharing that.
These different stories, these different ideas have been cultivated through decades. And they're just now, it's like they're now starting to bear fruit. Like I have another story that eventually would become From Parts Unknown. It started as an idea while I was walking on 79th and Amsterdam Avenue. In New York City in 1995. It's where I went to college. And
wow, we were there at the same time, George.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, I was performing in 95 in New York.
Oh, that's awesome. I was there from 94 to 98 at Marymount Manhattan College.
Okay.
And then from 94 to 2011, that's where I stayed. And then eventually made the move here in St. Louis in 2011 to kind of make the money go a little bit, stretch out a little bit more.
Wow, it's expensive.
Oh, yeah. But now it's just like, the opportunities that came up from being here, I wouldn't have had if I didn't make that move. But the great thing is I took From Parts Unknown with me and just kept on picking at it. And it was one thing and then it was another. It was a treatment. It was a script. And then it was a one-shot book. And now it's on its way to becoming a trilogy.
That's awesome.
And again, more than 30 years ago, that's where it all started. So those ideas...
writers or fans of that genre?
Oh yeah. They're, and I hope so. And I hope they keep on going with it. And because I'm loving this whole path and having this short screenplay that's making the rounds right now at film festivals. The great thing about that was that the idea, it went from idea to concept to story to finished screenplay to making the rounds in the film festivals in the same year. So it was one of those weird things where I was able to actually take something from beginning to end and get it out there in the world in a much, much quicker fashion than I normally would. So it's been a wild run.
Compresses the timeline, and that character's been with you for, like you say, 30 years.
With everything that we do, we are storytellers. We take those experiences over time. We take those memories over time. We take those ideas over time, and we just keep on working at them. We keep on picking at them, and eventually they come to fruition. And that's what you've done with your book and your album. And what you're also doing, which I'm really fascinated and looking forward to hearing more about, is you're also, as a wonderful nod to New Year's, and everyone is always looking to better themselves in a physical way, you have a plan for that as well. You have My Feelness. Care to tell us a little bit about that?
This is a big pivot. It's not at all a deviation from creativity.
Right.
Which
because
is
it's all about claiming. You said it yourself. It's about claiming who you are.
Exactly.
And claiming who you are, running with it. And so this is basically chipping away at what is inside of you and letting that resurface, or at least surface for the first time.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, the common thread between The Echo and the Voice, a fiction novel, and My Feelness is that Jonas's journey is all about questioning what they say is true, right? We've all heard, oh, they say. They say that the artists starve. They say that midlife crisis is a real thing. They say Jonas's character, like my own life, is always questioning those things. So when I met my partner, Katrina Hawley, who before we went live, I explained to you is an expert in all things physical human body. Mm-hmm. I learned that what they say about fitness is not true. It's another one of those cultural memes that nobody questions, because the human mind, when we hear the same thing over and over and over again, we just accept that it's true. No, they say, feel the burn. Mm-hmm. No pain, no gain, right?
Yep.
If you can't lose weight, you don't have discipline. If you're not strong, you're not responsible, you're lazy, right? None of this is true. And feelness was a product of saying, okay, now that I know what I always suspected is that you don't have to feel the burn. You don't have to be in pain. You do not have to ask extreme things of your body to have a good journey in the body that you were born with. And Katrina, being a Pilates instructor and a dance school staff member, helping people understand their bodies, what she showed me was, how do you listen to your body? Mm-hmm. What does your body say to you that the cultural norm ignores? And you've probably heard the phrase, oof. You've heard somebody say, oof. Like an older person bends over to tie their shoes. You go, oof.
And I've said it myself a few times.
So I'm your friend and I say, oh, what's wrong, George? And you say, I'm getting older. My back hurts a little bit. And then we both laugh it off. You're getting older. That's it. Well, none of that is actually true. So in the feelness world, there's 9 tasks that you and I have to do every day. And when our body sends us a signal of discomfort, causing us to say, oof, that's actually our biology and all its intelligence trying to communicate to us that there's something that you're not doing that you need to give attention to.
Yeah.
And the 9 things are getting out of bed, walking, reaching up high like coffee on the top shelf, bending over to tie the shoes, pet the cat, pet the dog, getting down on the floor, play with the grandkids, getting up from the floor again, and twisting to look over your shoulder like in the old days when we didn't have backup cameras in our car. So those 9 things are what feelness is built around. If at any moment, whether you're 20 or 92, if your body sends a signal and you make a sound, there's discomfort in that one of those 9 moves, you go to feelness, and there's a collection of 7 movements. They're groups of 7.
Yeah.
And they're focused on the different parts of the body, and there's only 7 areas of the body. Lower legs, upper legs, hips, spine, head, neck, and shoulders, arms, hands, and wrists. 7 areas. Each one of those tasks that makes you go, oof, there's a combination of moves that without weight, without resistance, without intensity, without breaking a sweat, if you simply move your body in those ways for 10 minutes at a time, maybe 2 times a day, you fix those problems, which is exactly what I did starting in July of 2023. I had 5 of 9 of those tasks making me go oof. By December of 23, I was down to only 2 of 9. And then finally, by February of 2024, all 9, all systems go. And I'm 63 now. That's what, 2 years ago? I've never felt better. And I don't do anything but these simple movements. Here's the big takeaway. These movements are what you see children do. It's what they do naturally because human beings, they're that intelligent. Even though as an infant, I couldn't say, Mom, this hurts or whatever. My intelligence, millions of years of evolution, told me exactly what to do as an infant to build the capacity that I would need as a bigger person to move through the world with ease and comfort, which is we're here to be easeful and in comfort. So that's the feel in the story.
Wow. That's fantastic. And that's in a way, it's matching what you've been doing using the AI tools that are there.
Yeah.
Because it's a matter of just kind of like learning how to properly use it. You're basically learning how to use your own body.
Yeah.
That is fascinating. That is, that is absolutely fascinating. And so if people want to get on board with MyFeelness, where do they go?
Well, myfeelness.com is the URL.
Mm-hmm.
All things that we're talking about today, George, there's a prominent link on markfirehammer.com as well.
Yeah.
So if they want to learn about the fiction, if they want to learn about the music and the way I use AI, if they want to learn about the new book that's coming out, which is nonfiction, or feel it's all there. But myfeelness.com for those that are really intrigued by this approach to wellness.
Fantastic. And so if someone were to say that they have a story in them that's ready to come out, or they want to better themselves in some way, whether it's physically, whether it is mentally, whether it is pursuing those creative outlets that they have been really wanting to do, but never really were able to take the initiative and make it happen. What is something that you would recommend that they do? What's, say, one task that you think that they should do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what it comes down to for me, and the advice that I always give, no matter what the struggle is do your best to remember what you loved as a child, because what you loved as a child is the pure voice of your humanity before it was told to be something. We've all heard the phrase, what are you going to be when you grow up? That's an abstraction. That is very much an artificial artifact of civilization itself. Humanity is millions of years old. Civilization is 10,000. Culture is only hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
So remember what really did it for you as a child and check in with that again, because you'll find information about what to do and what not to do from those early inspirations. I know you, George, can relate to that because of the Transformers, because of Star Wars, the Force. The Force itself, for me, is trading all organized faith for understanding that everything is connected. The Force is with you, right?
Yeah.
Connected
to
everything.
Absolutely.
So that would be my advice. Return to what you loved as a child and check in with whether or not what you think you want to do next, or the doubts that you have about what you've been doing, is in alignment with who you were as a child. And I think it all – I've never seen it not come together if you really put your mind to it and write it all down. Keep a journal, write it all down. I wouldn't have been able to write my book if I hadn't kept a rudimentarily timeline journal of my life starting in my single digits.
That's something that you want to talk about, like a perfect way to start off a new year. And everything that you have been listening to, everything that you have taken in with my discussion with Mark, everything encapsulates that. And funny enough, it also encapsulates my own New Year's resolution, which is to use the tools you already have. That is basically what we've been talking about all this time. All the things that you want to do, all the motivation, the inspiration, everything, it's already in you. It's up to you to bring it out. And it's up to you to just look at yourself and look at what is in front of you in that right way, in that right perspective. And everything that you have been taking with you all these years it is all still with you. It's on your journey. It is not to be discarded, because whatever is there, that is what makes you who you are. And I hope that you are using this time in the year 2026 to do exactly what Mark has been talking about, to claim who you are. And that is what we have been doing. That is what I have been hoping for, nothing less, for all of you to have been doing this for the past 11 seasons. And as we start season 12, I hope that you are taking everything that Mark has said to heart, and that you will take those necessary steps and actually do those steps, not to just let a tool do all the work for you. This is your time to get in, dive in, do that work, and once again, claim who you are. Because in these crazy times, we need your stories, we need your ideas, you need your vision now more than ever. So for Mark Firehammer, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to hesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@hesgotit.com.